Welcome to the OnFit Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. Very pleased to have an old friend with us today, Sujoy Bhuja, who is the MD and the CEO of the Indian Investment and Infrastructure Fund, which is a public-private partnership set up 5 or 6 years ago to try to give a real push to India's infrastructure development. Many of you know Sujoy. He was for many years at the IFC, I believe about 25 years before you joined the fund, now nearly 5 years ago. And you've been in charge of the fund at a remarkably difficult time. So I'd like to start with you, Sujoy, to ask about how the pandemic has affected you. You do have this amazingly ambitious plan, which you unveiled before the pandemic, for an infrastructure plan for India, about $1.5 trillion over the next 5 years. As a proportion of GDP, of course, this is much bigger than President Biden's plan. So a truly remarkable and ambitious plan, which I hope very much is going to go forward despite everything. But please tell us about the growth outlook that you see at the moment, and also to what extent have your plans been affected by the pandemic in India? So over to you, Sujoy.
So, you know, I think you guys are following, I'm sure, what's been happening in India over the last month. So after a very good and strong recovery, following the first wave, where all the key drivers of the economy were doing actually quite well, other than maybe some pockets such as even air travel, actually hospitality was coming back, everything was starting to come back. And then, I was looking at my calendar the other day, literally till the 5th of April, I was doing some lunches outdoors and stuff, meeting a few people. I was going to the office, and then bang, starting with around the 10th of April, we just went into this vicious second wave that has really been a challenge. And it has been it's a bit of a different situation this time. You know, last time around, the risk that we were dealing with, or the main issue that we were dealing with as people was an uncertainty, both as citizens as well as businesses. This time around, the fear was really uncertainty, what would happen out of the first wave and so on and so forth. This time around, the fear is different. I mean, it's been such a vicious wave, and I can tell you that the number of people who at close quarters has been affected is really, it creates a fear of health and risk and death. And that is really not a good place to be. You know, I would much rather be in the fear of uncertainty than in the fear of what we've been through in the last month. And as you all will I think understand, is that the scale of this in India is unprecedented. Right. And trying to get this thing done. So just to give you a sense, so the U.S. did about 170 million vaccinations in 114 days. India did 170 million vaccinations in 115 days. So we practically, you could look at it and you say we've done a great job vis-a-vis one of, the most prosperous country in the world. But then you look at this and you say the U.S. vaccinated 50% of its population and we've barely vaccinated 10%. And that's really the challenge, is how do you, manage through this crisis in the scale? And then, of course, given our fragile healthcare system to be hit with what we've been hit with in the last month, where I think all of us let down our guard. we as people, as leaders, as government, I think everybody we let our guard down and we've learned a really, learned this lesson, a very tough lesson through this. So now the big question that you've asked, David, is what happens now? Where do we go from here? And I'll sort of start, giving you some anecdotal stuff that we are seeing, which I think should guide us for the future. And then I'll talk a little bit about how I see the longer term. So, in our business, what we actually own companies. We own companies that are in power, in logistics, in roads. We own a non-banking finance operation. So, and we own control stakes in these companies. So we see what's happening on the ground. And I think the anecdotal evidence is quite telling. So you had asked a question of projects continuing, and I'll give you sort of the anecdotal evidence from what we are seeing. In the first wave, the issue that we had was lockdown, right? So we went into a very sharp and very strict lockdown, and that was what really sort of slowed down some of our projects. This time around, it's been different. So in the last month, it's simply the number of people on project site who have been impacted by COVID is what has caused us problems. So in one of our renewable companies, which is in a sort of a very remote area in Rajasthan, we've actually shut down the site because the contractor was struggling to keep the number of infections down among the team. So we simply shut that project down, and it's been shut now for almost 2 or 3 weeks. On the other hand, closer to Mumbai, we have a greenfield, a free trade warehousing zone that we are building. And there the contractor is one of our top contractors in the, they've actually done a of managing, the labor on site, and that project continues. So we haven't had to shut it down because we haven't had a lot of impact over there. We look at what happened after the first wave. After the first wave, so we own, and one great example is we own two roads. One is a road that connects the Bangalore city to Bangalore airport, and the other is a long distance highway. So of course, the Bangalore airport road is impacted because of air travel. On the other hand, long distance cargo has continued. And we see in the last month, we see a decline, but generally speaking, following the first wave, things have come back, and we were actually beating projections. In that project. Similarly, on logistics platform was doing really well. We were actually ahead of EBITDA projections in January, in February, and in potentially in March. But following the middle of April, things have started to slow down again. So net, there is clearly, it depends on how long this this wave continues. The good news is that it's starting to stabilize. So after hitting a peak of almost 400,000 cases a day, we are now back down to 280,000 cases a day. Mumbai, for example, is 1/10 of what it was at its at the peak. It was about 10,000, almost 11,000 cases a day. Now it's about 1,000 cases a day. So Delhi, Bombay, Bangalore, they've hit their peak, and they seem to be starting to stabilize. But of course, the length of this lockdown is going to be a crucial factor.
That's very helpful, Sujoy, that you put that into that context, and you've also told us a few stories which give us the idea that there may be some elements of the business that you're in which are still performing according to expectations. Others, for understandable reasons, have faced setbacks. Based on your knowledge of the situation, and based on talking to the government and the health experts, when do you think is the earliest time that India realistically could get back to some kind of normality? Are we talking about 3 or 4 months? Are we talking about longer than that? Perhaps you could just give us your own estimates based on your knowledge of what is a very uncertain situation.
Look, I think that's your last comment is the first thing I would say, that I think it's uncertain. The two things I would say, it's uncertain. I think the data is better in kind of the more wealthy states, Maharashtra, Tamil Nadu, Gujarat here. This is, you can track data better. And in the cities, in the big cities, in the rural areas, more difficult to track data. So unclear what's, I wouldn't even be able to, speculate what's happening that much in rural areas. But what, the optimistic, I would say, sense is that within the next month, so we've been through this for a month now, and in another month to 2 months, we should start to stabilize. And in the big cities, so in Mumbai, in Maharashtra also, there was really rapid push to action to tackle the second wave. What we are not only, are we sort of seeing a reduction in the capacity utilization of hospital beds, etc., but also the government is already preparing for the third wave. And it, has built in Mumbai, for example, the commissioner, the municipal commissioner here basically says that he's built a very solid vaccination infrastructure, which actually within 2 months, he's saying that he can vaccinate the entire population of Mumbai. So I think now, the you know, we, as I said, we probably let our guard down after the first wave. Now I think everybody's getting onto a war footing. And I believe that, I'd like to believe at least that from now on, it's going to be a much tighter management and control of both vaccination as well as the whole social distancing, mask wearing, all those kinds of aspects.
Thank you for making that clear. I want to ask you, though, Sujoy, you've already got this massive investment program, which we were talking about, which I presume is going to go ahead. You know, there's no question about that. It's all necessary. On top of that, are you being asked to do other things which have been put to you by either investors or by the government because they're necessary and have been shown to be necessary because of the pandemic? So you might have another load of work on top of this already very substantial and very ambitious program.
You know, just speaking for NIIF, so obviously for India, there is a very ambitious infrastructure development program. NIIF is only a part of it, right? And the government has actually done a very good job of working with us at arm's length. And that is why we've been able to attract in investors, commercial investors, because they see the benefit of having the government as a partner, but also the professionalism and the commercial nature of the business, which gives them confidence that they can fulfill their fiduciary responsibilities to their, you know, pensioners, insurers, etc. So part of it is going to hopefully happen through NIIF, and where we are really focused on is bringing equity capital. So the one of the issues in India is that India is a savings country. You know, India saves about 20% of GDP, so we are probably saving around $600 billion. If you look at bank deposits, even through the last year and a half, bank deposits have soared, right? So a lot of savings are coming into the banking system, into the pension system, into the insurance system. But those systems do not yet have the expertise to take, or the risk appetite to take positions in equity in infrastructure and alternative assets, I would say, which, for example, the Canadian pension funds, the Australians, they've done very successfully. That is where NIIF plays a role. So NIIF's role is to utilize the government partnership, but then to actually raise commercial capital at scale to address this equity gap in infrastructure and private equity in the country. And we are not only, by the way, doing infrastructure. So I don't know if some of you saw, but we just made one of the largest investments ever made by an Indian fund manager into one of the large hospital chains in the country. And we believe that this is, of course, it's a part of the health infrastructure of the country. It's a private hospital chain. And it's also going to be, we think, a great investment just because of the great governance, the very good operating skills that the platform has, and its ability to actually consolidate the sector. So we are thinking beyond infrastructure, but we will always be kind of, we'll have a very clear focus on infrastructure. And really what we are is that we are a fund manager in a PPP format, public-private format, operating in two asset classes, infrastructure and growth private equity. So what I also wanted to address, David, is a little bit your question about, okay, so where do we all go from, where do we go from here in India? You know? And I'm a big India bull over the long term. And why is that the case? And I look at all these, and, you know, as you said, I've worked for 25 years, I've worked on emerging markets. And I've seen the ups and downs. You know, I've worked through the Asian crisis, the number of Latin American crises. And we've always seen the economies come back, and we've seen investors come back, and investors actually doing well when they're stuck on. India is the same. I mean, India's been through its ups and downs as well during those 25 years. And the way I see it is that India, it took India about 60 years to generate our first $1 trillion of GDP. And then we generated the next trillion in 14 years. And then in the next 14 years, we actually expect, and currently we're at about 3 trillion, but in the next 14 years, we expect to double this economy and you know, go from 3 trillion to 6 trillion. And this is what is, so we are almost going to create a whole new Indian economy and bolt it on to what we have now. And while these short-term situations may delay that a bit, I don't see a change in the direction of that at all. And I think what's also happening alongside this is that there is a steady flow of reforms coming from the government. So if you look at, you know, the bankruptcy code, the GST, which is one tax for the one indirect tax for the entire country, like a VAT kind of a system, the ability to, you know, by the way, the whole concept of what's called, what we call the Jam Trinity, which is the combination of mobile phones, a unique identification number, which, by the way, we Indians didn't have till the concept of Aadhaar was created, and bank accounts. So the concept of a identification number, mobile phones, and bank account. And what that has done is, you'll be amazed, we are now at about 2.5 billion, you know, online transactions. And by the way, credit card usage in India has been dropping. So it's a fascinating sort of, you know, this whole concept of there's a reform aspect, there's a digital aspect. You know, there's so many, by the way, the pharmaceutical industry, you know, the healthcare industry has been doing really well. The whole digital economy has been doing really well. And there are lots of pockets of growth.
It's very nice to hear of this enthusiasm. But could you just say a word about the investment appetite abroad? The extent that you've been going through this very bad period, has that diminished any of the appetite that you see from investors abroad, whether they be public or private investors, for the kind of public-private partnerships and the equity participations that you are offering? Can you give us a bit of a flavor of that, please?
I'll give you a bit of a longer term. So over the last 2 years, you know, what we've been really delighted about is that we've been able to raise a substantial amount of capital from some of the premier pension funds and sovereign funds around the world. And there's clearly a lot of appetite, you know, among the larger pension funds, the Canadian pension funds, the Australian pension funds, the European insurance companies, the sovereigns from the Emirates, from, you know, not just the Emirates, actually from the Middle East, from Singapore. And now we start seeing the U.S., some of the U.S. pension funds. Just before the pandemic, in fact, we had started discussions with the U.S. pension fund on an investment into one of our funds. So we see this this enthusiasm, and we can see that they see what they like. And then if you look at what's happened is that infrastructure assets, any infrastructure asset that has come into the market has got significant interest from international investors. And the recent issuance of a what's called an InvIT in India. An InvIT is like it's an infrastructure investment trust, but it's like a REIT, you know, on the real estate side. So the government has come up with a new instrument, which they call InvIT. And the public transmission company did an InvIT of a few of their transmission assets. And there was a significant oversubscription, including from international investors. And the issue closed at about 8.25% IRR in Indian rupees. And that shows the appetite that international investors have for low risk, yielding, you know, yield oriented, stable infrastructure assets in India. And now the government is starting to bring up a few more of these InvITs, and I think they're going to be very, very exciting for some of those international investors. So we've seen that, and then we've seen the digital side, right? On the digital side, the number of unicorns that were created in India in the last year outsized the ones that were created before that. So we've had, I'm forgetting the exact number, but almost a dozen unicorns who have raised a substantial amount of capital, you know, from all around the world, from institutions as well as from some of the VC-oriented funds.
Just to be precise, Sujoy, sorry to interrupt on that, but just to be precise on that, the unicorns, are they nearly all of them in areas which have been given a boost, an extra fillip by the pandemic? So is that, if you like, a direct consequence of the pandemic, that you have this new growth of the unicorns?
I think you are right, because see, I see what's happening. At least I think that the organized sector is the big winner out of this pandemic. So the organized sector, which can accept payments online, which has a digital platform, etc., is the big winner. And some of the organized sector is actually figuring out how to use the unorganized sector. So in other words, you know, in my neighborhood in Mumbai, there are a number of these small stores, you know, which are really unorganized, you know, retail. And the big platforms, our large platforms, the organized platforms are starting to figure out how to actually use those unorganized retail shops for last mile delivery. So there's some very interesting, I would say, models that are you know, coming out of this whole, out of the last year and a half. But I think in general, I would agree with your thesis that the unicorns, you know, whether it be in pharmacies, whether it be in online groceries, retail, online retail, etc., you know, these are all the big winners out of, I used to be a, you know, technology illiterate, literally, and I had to start figuring out how to pay stuff, you know, online rather than by writing checks, you know, so.
I can't believe that, Sujoy. I think you're being far too modest. But anyway, it's a good point. How does the number of unicorns in India compare with those elsewhere in Southeast Asia? If you don't know the answers now, we can find them out later. But then he also has this question about the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, the RCEP. India has opted not to join this. And does this affect India's attractiveness as an investment destination?
So on your first question, I don't know the exact number, but I would imagine that, I would speculate, I shouldn't say imagine, but I would speculate that after China, India is probably the second largest in the region in terms of unicorns. So it's now a fairly healthy number. I think you know, we have this concept of unicorns and sunicorns, and between them, I think there's close to 100 companies. And unicorns may be in the range of 20 or 30 of them, many of which have actually reached the billion-dollar valuation in the last year, year and a half. So it's a fairly rich offering of companies, you know, of opportunities that that India is starting to generate. On the RCET, on the trade, you know, it doesn't, at least so far, it doesn't seem so, because last year India was the highest recipient of foreign direct investment of any country in the world. And the FDI numbers have been going up quite substantially year on year on year. And I think it's basically what I described. It's the combination of the growth opportunity, the ongoing reforms, the stability of the currency, because, you know, we have a record amount of foreign exchange savings in the Reserve Bank, and the currency has been relatively stable. And one of the reasons for that also has been inflation targeting. So inflation targeting has, after, you know, inflation being really, really resilient to all attempts, it's finally come down quite sharply. And so have interest rates. So all these aspects, I think, have given people a lot of interest in investing in India.
Oh, well, thank you for putting so positively, Sujoy. Thank you for your undiminished enthusiasm, Sujoy. I do hope that you and your family and all your staff are keeping as well as you possibly can, because it must be a worry. As you said right at the very beginning, this is not just the normal kind of uncertainty. This is fear of death that is stalking India. But I do think it's been very positive and realistic and uplifting for us to listen to you. So thank you for taking the time for this. Thank you, everybody, for listening and being on the call. And Sujoy, we'll be in touch very soon to build on what you've been saying.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the OnFifth Podcast.